Welcome. You are about to take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Bouffet on the Love by Intuition show. For the next hour, allow her to prepare you in becoming a magnet for a profound love-infused relationship by identifying and focusing on solutions through love. Awaken the light within and let your essence shine. And now, here's Deborah Bouffet on Love by Intuition, all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Welcome, everyone. Bonjour, mes amis. And yes, here I am, Deborah Bouffet, founder and owner of the Dream Vision 7 radio network, as well as the Kids for Love project and writing the book and all kinds of good things that we have created or have been led to by, I think, a lot of times by a higher source when we do good things. Well, if you're tuning in for the first time, we're Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is a syndicated Boston-based internet radio station with all the bells and whistles. You can listen to us wherever you are in the world. You can listen in the cars. You can ask Alexa to play Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, and we have the apps and all good things. So whatever, and we're also, I'd like to mention, we're on 50 to 60 different podcast directory platforms, so you can find us at your favorite place or just tune in to our own station. This is a live show, and Bob is in the house, so if you would like to call in and ask myself or my guest, who is Barbara, please do. Our number here is 833-220-1200. It's toll-free, 833-220-1200. Well, my guest, I actually had Barbara Saltzman on my Kids for Love show, I think about 10 years ago, with Wendy Fashon, who is one of our hosts and does Sustainable Living radio show, so check that out. Barbara and I reconnected, and she has been working tirelessly on her nonprofit and is 28 years old. It's called the Jester and Folly Fund, Home of the Jester Has Lost His Jingle, by her son, David Saltzman. The fund is a charitable 501 organization dedicated to helping children with cancer and other serious illnesses. With the inspiration of David's award-winning The Jester Has Lost His Jingle, the book, The Jester Book, which Barbara brought to publishing after David passed, and then the Folly Book, has been bringing smiles to the lives of thousands of children with serious illnesses, actually over $230,000 in books have been donated to hospitals and schools. So we're going to find out more about what Barbara's doing, how she started all this, because it's quite a journey, and we'll be sharing all kinds of information. So without further ado, Barbara, come on into the show. And welcome.
Hello. Hello, Deborah. It's a pleasure to join you again and to hear your lovely voice, and thank you for all the kind words.
You're welcome, and they're well-deserved when you think about all that you have done. Do you have to, do you stop and pinch yourself when you think that that your fund, the Jester and Folly Fund, is 28 years old?
Well, actually, the book is 28 years old. It's actually very close to celebrating its 30th anniversary. The fund itself is technically 24 years old, but we began when we published the book to work with other nonprofits to ensure that the Jester Has Lost His Jingle would be donated to every child in the country diagnosed with cancer. And that was in 1995. So there's a lot of numbers running around. I often get them crossed in my mind.
I can see why. So tell us, for the people that aren't aware, tell us a little bit about David and then how the book came about, and then, you know, then as you said, that you started the Jester and Folly Fund. So, but tell us more about David and how this all came about.
David was a student at Yale University, and between his junior and senior years, he went on a summer school program, actually to Greece, and he had a chance to learn about all of the Greek myths and gods and goddesses and all that in Greece, and he fell in love with it. And while he was in the program, which was actually sponsored by the University of Southern California, where his father, Joe Saltzman, my husband, teaches, one day he walked into his classroom and he made a silly joke and nobody laughed. Nobody smiled at him. Nobody said hello. Nobody acknowledged his presence. And his good mood soon turned upside down. And he went to his desk and took out his notebook and began to doodle. He always had a piece of paper and a pencil or pen with him because he was always drawing and doodling and writing down thoughts of his. And he didn't know what he was drawing, and he absentmindedly put together a very sad little face that looked just the way he felt at that moment. And then he unknowingly wrote the words, "The jester has lost his jingle." And he was, of course, thinking of himself as the jester. And then he randomly had put a little hat on this jester, and he began thinking about it consistently. And after school, he went back to his room, and he started thinking, I bet there's a wonderful story about a jester who loses his jingle. Where would the jester go? What would he do? Would he ever find it again? How would he find it? And he sat down that night, and it was the summer of 1988, and he did a storyboard of the Jester Has Lost His Jingle story, which is what the book actually is now. And he worked on it over the summer while he was still studying and still traveling. And when he returned to Yale in the fall, he got approval for it to be his senior project. He was an art and an English major. And he worked on the book all the time along with his studies. He was a cartoonist for two competing student newspapers. He was a school tour guide. He did posters for people who needed posters for their projects. And while doing all of this, in the middle of it, he was diagnosed with a form of cancer called, at the time, Hodgkin's disease. Now it's called Hodgkin's lymphoma. And he immediately had to begin treatment for it. And throughout his senior year, he stayed at Yale, wanted to finish with his friends and colleagues, and he continued to work on the book. When he graduated Yale, and he received a prize as being the most inspirational student on campus, a very coveted prize, and he came home, and at the moment he was in remission, but within a month he relapsed, and he ended up having to have a bone marrow transplant, which unfortunately, as difficult as it was to go through, did not save his life. But before he passed away, our family promised him that his book would not die with him, that it would continue to live and help other children with cancer and other serious challenges in their life. And he died, ironically, on March 2nd and in 1990. And that March 2nd is Dr. Seuss's birthday, so it's celebrated now all across the country as Read Across America Day. And we have developed, with the Jester and Farley Fund, which we founded in 2000, to expand our reach and go beyond just helping children with cancer, but helping boost literacy, because we received so much response when the book came out. It became a New York Times bestseller, and it was used by libraries and teachers and families all over the country, and they all started sending me lesson ideas, lesson plans, and I visited school after school and discovered that children of every background all fell in love with the story and what David had come up with. He had created a character who was his alter ego. And the story is a very simple but profound one at the same time. It's the story of a jester and his little handheld scepter, a little piece of, he called it a piece of talking wood, that he named Farley with a P-H, and that's why we're called the Jester and Farley, P-H-A-R-L-E-Y, Fund, P-H-U-N-D. And they go off to entertain the king as usual, but suddenly nobody finds them funny anymore, and the king kicks them out of the kingdom. And they determine that laughter can't have disappeared from the world. So they go off on a quest to find it. They have a lot of fun and yet serious adventures. The book is very whimsical. It's all told in rhyme. And they ultimately wind up in a very unhappy big city, very similar to New York at the time. And they enter a hospital, and before they go in, the jester tells Farley that they can't give up. And he says, it's up to us to make a difference. It's up to us to care. And we've taken that as the mantra or motto of the Jester and Farley Fund. And they go into the hospital, and they meet a little girl who says she's very sad because she says, here I lie, I have a tumor, and you ask me, where's my sense of humor? And the little girl tells him, she just feels like crying, not laughing. And the jester says that he feels like crying too many times, but when he does, he turns his sadness upside down and stands it on its head. And he and Farley try to entertain the little girl exactly as they entertained the king. And together, the three of them rediscover laughter inside themselves. And they race back to the kingdom with rainbows in their wake. And they tell the king they've discovered that laughter hasn't disappeared after all. It's not dead. It's hiding inside all of us. It's buried deep within. And the ending line of the story is, when you're feeling lonely or sad or bad or blue, remember where laughter's hiding. It's hiding inside of you.
Yeah, and, which when you think about that, Barbara, I mean, love is who we are, each and every one of us, and we came from love. And so that his insight and depth of what he was feeling is really a universal message, because when you go inside, you can find that love. And so with the Jester and Folly, they're helping each child and person to go within and find that love, regardless of what is happening.
You're so right, Deborah. And that is the universal message that people discover all the time and rediscover. They retain their copies of The Jester Has Lost His Jingle, which we also now have available in a bilingual English and Spanish edition, which incorporates the original exactly as it was put together. And we discover that people hang on to their copy, they revisit the story, they turn to it all the time whenever they're having a difficult day, they're challenged, even though the book, in order to sell it in bookstores, we had to categorize the ages that would be most attracted to the book, and so I had to put down from 4 to 8. But in reality, the book has been enjoyed by much younger kids and much, much more elderly adults. It really speaks to everyone, even though it's technically a children's book. And the pictures are bright and very funny and whimsical, and really like David, the jester was his alter ego, and Farley is kind of like a symbol for all his friends, for his brother Michael, and all the many friends he met along the way that he held dearly and kind of included within his reference.
So when you decided to publish the book, you probably knew when David was here that regardless of what happens, that book is going to be published, correct? That's how I would feel. So how difficult was it to get it published and then get it out there?
Very difficult, to sum it up. Yeah, initially, we did have a lot of publicity, and I did all the PR and marketing for the book. And it became a New York Times bestseller. And as I said, we heard from people all over the country about how much they loved it and how much it meant to them. And but to get it published, we did have an agent. And having covered Hollywood as an editor at the LA Times for a long time, I kind of anticipated the response I would get, because everybody would say in not so many words, basically, how are we going to keep this project going without the author and artist being alive? Well, the book really took on a life of its own, but what happened is we ended up presenting it to an agent who showed it to publishers and so forth. And the book is 64 pages long, which is long for a children's book, even though all Dr. Seuss's books are pretty much 64 pages long. But the book is in rhyme. The book is in color on every single page. And I insisted that it had to be hardcover with a dust jacket and a color picture on the dust jacket and on the cover, and color on every page, and high quality paper, like a museum published book would be. And everybody said, well, that's just too expensive. We can't do a book like that. And then finally at one point, this was over a period of 5 years, they said, well.
And it was before self-publishing, correct?
Yeah,
self-publishing wasn't really big at that time.
No, it was not. We were kind of at the breakthrough successful self-publisher. But I don't consider it self-publishing. I just formed a publishing company with our family.
Sure.
And we ended up publishing the book. The agent said, well, they had, the book was too long. Nobody was buying rhyme anymore. And they had actually found someone to translate David's book into prose. And I said, no, nobody's changing this into prose. If it needs that kind of translation, we'll do it ourselves. I'm a writer and an editor. My husband teaches journalism at USC. At the time, he was also a documentary producer, very highly regarded. David's brother is a writer, for television, primarily, and film. And we said, we'll do it alone, but this book is not going to be translated into prose. We're going to do it exactly the way David wanted it. I mean, I had gone over the book page by page with David before he passed away, and he told me exactly how he wanted it done. He broke all sorts of rules. He didn't do things the way everybody else did or according to everybody's formula. And
right.
So what we finally did is I took hold of it with David's older brother, Michael, and we brought it with the help of found a wonderful artist to help us and graphic designers. I can edit books, but I can't draw them myself, but I know good from bad. And I had read hundreds, thousands probably of children's books to my two boys, and I knew that this book would appeal to children. And so ultimately, we mortgaged our house. We had a second mortgage. And the standards I used for publishing the book were the same that I would have used had I published it for the LA Times or Random House or any other publishing company. And I didn't compromise on quality. And anybody who looked at it did not think it was a quote-unquote self-published vanity production. Which it was not. I'm professional, even though I had to learn how to be a publisher. I had always worked for other publishers, basically the LA Times and other newspapers. But I had never done a children's book. So it was a long, arduous, exciting, but fulfilling project for me.
And for it to be on the New York Times list, that is phenomenal.
Thank you. They were surprised.
Whose book is on, Dr. Bernie Siegel's book's on New York Times list. So for that to be, so that must have given you so much validation, pleasure. You must have just been elated as a mom to be able to bring it all to fruition, and in David's name as well. And so what happened that brought you, you know what, we need a nonprofit and we want to go into schools and hospitals and we want to go beyond this country? What happened that you said to yourself, let's do this? Must have had a lot of energy.
Yeah. One of the exciting things in terms of bringing it to publication is Maurice Sendak, who wrote and illustrated Where the Wild Things Are and is considered the finest children's author and artist of the certainly 20th century. We started in the 20th century. What we did as I started getting letters from children from, we donated 10,000 copies of The Jester with money we raised when the book came out, to every child in the country diagnosed with cancer in 1990.
And, what a feat.
1995. David died in 1990. But during that time period, there were an average of 10,000 kids a year diagnosed with cancer. Now that's up to between 15 and 17,000. The number is kind of little bit.
Are you surprised by that, Barbara?
I'm not. I think there is better diagnosis now. The population is larger, but also the other factor may be environmental things that we're subject to that are very harmful. And nobody really quite has cancer, but I think maybe all those things are factors. And so what happened when the book came out, it became not only a New York Times bestseller, it was a USA Today bestseller, it was an LA Times bestseller, it was a Kansas City Star bestseller, it was a bestseller, in New York, all over the country. And I kept hearing from people and getting invitations to go to hospitals to share the book as we donated it and to visit schools. And I kept getting lesson plans and ideas for projects from teachers and letters from kids telling me how much the book meant to them. I was invited to one school in South Los Angeles.
Barbara, hold that thought. We're going to come right back, but we need to take a break. Everyone, stay with us. We'll be back more with Barbara Saltzman, president of the Jester and Folly Fund.
Experience a different yet profound healing with Reconnective Healing. Includes yet expands beyond any and all known forms of energy healing. The Reconnective Healing Spectrum is comprised of the full healing and evolutionary continuum of energy, light, and information. It allows for healings that are not just physical, not just mental, not just emotional, yet go beyond that to bring healing that includes the evolution of your very being and essence. Deborah Beauvais, trained and certified by world-renowned Dr. Eric Pearl, offers appointment hours at Seekonk Family Chiropractic in Seekonk, Massachusetts. For questions or to set up both distance or local sessions, call Deborah at 508-431-1959. Again, 508-431-1959. Or go to lovebyintuition.com. That's lovebyintuition.com.
Calling all authors. Have you been considering an audiobook? Well, look no further. Come take advantage of DreamVision 7 Radio Network's unique in-house audiobook production, which includes benefits and bonuses from our radio station. Let our knowledgeable staff guide you to create the audiobook you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank. Check out our full one-stop service from A to Z, including the ACX process. Schedule a free consultation by calling 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to DreamVision7Radio.com.
After narrowly surviving the attack on Sandy Hook Elementary, first grade teacher Caitlin Roy DeVellis was left searching for answers that would never come. Eventually, she chose to focus on questions that could be answered. How do I make sure this tragedy doesn't define us? How do we get our control back? Those two questions led her to found the 501c3 nonprofit organization Classes for Classes. When gifts poured into their classroom, she decided they would help someone else by paying it forward and being kind. This developed into a social network which allows K-8 classrooms to connect so that every student in the United States can learn these crucial lessons. Classes for Classes' mission is to build students' social-emotional intelligence by connecting them to care. All C4C projects are crowdfunded. Any teacher in the U.S. can visit classesforclasses.org. That's classes, the number 4, classes.org. Sign up today.
Delight your kids with an enchanting journey by reading the Paper Doll Kids Children's Book by Deborah Bovee and Janine Sullivan. There's even a catchy tune, Kids for Love Song, produced by Bob Sherwood and sung by kids just like yours. The story weaves around 7 paper dolls flying around the world doing good deeds as they bring important attention to our endangered animal friends. There's even a magical ring with a universal message. Kids become interested in service projects, action through compassion, and planting seeds that nurture positive change. The Paper Doll Kids and Kids for Love Song are a production of the Kids for Love Project. Get the book now on Amazon Kindle and the song on CD Baby or iTunes.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back, and we're talking with the president of the Jester and Folly Fund, Barbara Saltzman. She's sharing her journey about her son, David Saltzman, how the book came about through his eyes. And then when he passed, she had it published and then started a nonprofit. If you want to get into and the nonprofit, I want to stress that it's to help children with cancer and other serious illnesses. To go on their site and learn more, it's thejester.org, just as it sounds, thejester.org. You can also go and call directly. They're out in California, 310-310-544-4733. Again, 310-544-4733. You can go on the site, make a donation in the name of a loved one. And if you want to connect with Barbara directly, it's barbara@thejester.org. So before the break, you were talking about all the activity that was coming from giving away those 10,000 dolls, I mean books. And then even kids were writing you letters. So go from there.
Well, before I even had enough books on hand to give to schools, we now do that through our literacy and outreach programs. I visited schools because as people read about us, I got calls from teachers all over. And I got one call from a fourth grade teacher in a school in South Los Angeles. And I only had one book, and I had to read it. We didn't have any electronics. Everything was done by hand, actually, on the book. There's no computer involved in any of it. And I read the book, holding it up to pictures and pages. And 2 days later, I told the story. The kids were so receptive. They were adorable. And 2 days later, I got a letter from the teacher with a drawing, and it was done by a young boy in the class who apparently had had a very, very difficult life and a very, very challenging home life. And he drew a series of gestures that started with the darker colors in the range of colors in the rainbow. And they went from darker to brighter to brighter to brighter. And he was drawing gestures. Each one was a gesture. And he simply wrote, "I like your book," meaning David's book. "I like your book. It fills me up with joy."
Oh.
And to me, that has been the most wonderful review the book has ever received. And it convinced me that we had to really expand our reach and be able to get to more children like this young boy. This was like over 28 years ago, and who I hope now is a happy grown young man. And we decided that we would become a nonprofit, which we really wanted to do from the beginning, but our accountant had told us we didn't have enough money to be a nonprofit. So as the book became successful and a bestseller everywhere and attracted the attention of librarians and community organizations, we founded the Jester and Farley Fund. And what we did, based on all the feedback I was getting, one particular letter I got from a school in Rhode Island, Elmhurst Elementary, in 1999. And the children there loved the book so much in that school that they decided they wanted to give copies to the hospital closest to them, which was Hasbro Children's Hospital in Providence.
Right.
And we had donated to that hospital already as part of our initial donation and ongoing donations. And what they came up with is a readathon that they would do for a week for a penny a page. And whatever money they raised for every page they read, a penny for every page they read, they would turn over to us to give Jester books to the children at Hasbro Children's Hospital. And mm-hmm. they ended up reading 13,978 pages in a week. And
wow.
I got a check for $139.78. And it really confirmed for me what we had to do going forward and paying it forward. And so we developed two Jester and Farley Fund literacy programs, literacy and outreach. One is called Reading Makes a Difference. That is really our primary program, and that is funded by donations, by grants, by donations from organizations, from individuals, and so forth. And what the children do in our Reading Makes a Difference program is we do assemblies which introduce them to the Jester, kind of like I'm doing right now, but they're visual because they're in person or by Zoom. And then the children learn all about David and hear the story of the book and its creation. And then they begin a read-a-thon, similar to what happened in Rhode Island. They read as much as they can for 3 weeks, and we have reading logs that they fill out, and we ask their parents to read with them. And then we, in between, beginning with COVID, we started doing a Q&A with the Jester's mom, who is me, who is I. We do that while they're in the middle of the readathon, so they can connect with David through me. And especially with COVID, all encountered so much isolation and sadness and confusion.
Yes.
Been very hard for all of us. And what they do is they relate to David and him as a human being and his story and relate that to themselves. And they ask the most wonderful questions, and they get so inspired to also become writers and illustrators and artists and storytellers themselves, and they become inspired to feel better about themselves, to find laughter within themselves whenever they need to. And it's become an incredible, incredible program. And then we do a final recognition assembly, a capstone assembly, where we recognize all the reading that the kids have done. We tally all the pages from their reading logs, and we recognize the whole school, and we also recognize the top readers in each class. The top reader receives a copy of our bilingual English and Spanish, Jester Has Lost His Jingle, and the finalist receives a journal. And in that journal, they can write down their thoughts and ideas and drawings, as David did growing up himself, without any input from anybody else. And in all of the programs that we've done nearly 300 Reading Makes a Difference programs, and in those programs, kids have read nearly 49 million pages in order to donate gesture books and dolls to children in local hospitals or local organizations where they need the comfort of the gesture. And then we have a Reading to Give program, which is closer to the Elmhurst program, where children raise the money themselves, and then the books are donated to, again, to an organization or a hospital that in their community most needs encouragement and support of the gesture. And we've donated over 16,000 books and dolls through that, through these two programs, and are continuing to expand them. And this year we also added a really exciting art component so that children can draw what makes them happy and where they go to look for laughter. And
I love the way that you've incorporated the teaching of the kids and incorporating the art, and through David's work, and he lives on through them and inspires them. He's on the other side, but he's inspiring others to draw, to to actually write books themselves or anything that they decide, because they're through the inspiration. So that must make you feel, well, how do you feel? What do you feel when all of this has been created and it keeps blossoming into whatever's needed?
Yeah, I feel so happy and so proud of David and his vision and what he was able to do through this very simple but yet complex story. And I feel so proud of all the children who have participated in our programs and how we're now hearing back from them like 20 years later, and they're adults, and they have children of their own, and they want to have the gesture for their children as well. And it makes me so happy to know that his message is really held so dearly by so many hundreds of thousands of people. We are now raising funds to print the 30th anniversary publication of The Jester Has Lost His Jingle.
Oh, wow.
And
that's exciting.
It is very exciting. I'd love to speak with any of your listeners and followers who are interested in participating in our programs, whether with the hospitals, with schools. Because of electronics nowadays and Zoom and podcasts like yours, we can develop this program in every community in the country, and we can help so many children. And the program also has introduced me to so many wonderful people that I never would have met without it, including you and a fantastic friend of yours, Wendy Fashon, who had a son who unfortunately also died of cancer, but she has moved forward in furthering his thoughts and ideas. And when he was in high school, he actually participated in high school programs that introduced the gesture to children in their community.
And yes, he did. Yes.
And,
isn't that something?
It's so amazing. It's so amazing. And I hear from parents of children who got the book when their child was born and had really serious cancer issues. They didn't know if their child would survive. But because we had donated the books to hospitals all over the country, they received the book, and the book helped them get through it. Their child survived. I hear from youngsters who are now grown up who got the book when they were 3, when they were 18, when they were 15, and they were all confronted with cancer, and it has helped them for years now, and they're now in their 20s and 30s, And many of them have gone into healthcare themselves, and they use the gesture to help their patients. And I can't tell you how the satisfaction that gives me. And, you know, if mm-hmm. I could win a lottery, I would give this book to every child in every hospital, every foster care center, every clinic in the country. And, in fact, we did get a commission to do a Japanese edition of the book several years ago, and it was given to the Japanese Red Cross Society, which has hospitals throughout the country, and it was initially designated for 5,000 children in their hospitals who would be coping with cancer. And after they received the book, I received communication from the president of the Red Cross Society in Japan saying, would I give them permission to give it to every baby born in their hospitals, because they felt this book was so important in developing children with who would be very kind, giving youngsters and later adults. And so we did.
And, that is, that's exceptional, Barbara. We need to take our last break. The time is going by, flying. Everyone will be back in a moment with Barbara Saltzman and the Jester and Folly Fund. And the book, The Jester Has Lost His Jingle.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. Eastern. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, and to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Come join us and step into this glorious vibration called love.
Delight your kids with an enchanting journey by reading the Paper Doll Kids children's book by Deborah Beauvais and Janine Sullivan. There's even a catchy tune, Kids for Love Song, produced by Bob Sherwood and sung by kids just like yours. The story weaves around seven paper dolls flying around the world doing good deeds as they bring important attention to our endangered animal friends. There's even a magical ring with a universal message. Kids become interested in service projects, action through compassion, and planting seeds that nurture positive change. The Paper Doll Kids and Kids for Love Song are a production of the Kids for Love Project. Get the book now on Amazon Kindle and the song on CD Baby or iTunes.
Are miracles real? Can you move from mayhem to miracles? 30 prominent authors say yes as they share their high fives and down lows of challenges, abuse, addiction, and love. Experience hope, the magic elixir of miracles, through the personal stories of New York Times bestselling authors James Redfield, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Sister Jenna, Reverend Temple Hayes, and many more. If you like bestsellers, Chaos to Clarity, and Crappy to Happy, you'll love Crying and Laughing Through Mayhem to Miracles. Sacred Stories of Transformational Hope, available now on Amazon and in bookstores worldwide.
It's a child's job to play, to learn, and to have fun. It's an adult's job to keep them safe. Did you know that 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused before the age of 18? Every day, families enter the Children's Advocacy Center because of child's courage to tell someone what happened to them. Keeping our children safe starts with a conversation. This is Michelle Aranger, Executive Director of the Children's Advocacy Center. Learn more on how to keep your child safe. Visit cacofbc.org. This message made possible by the Fall River Rotary Club.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
There is still time to call in. Bob is in the house and we'll put you directly through. Our number is 833-220-1200, but the time is moving quickly, so you'll need to act quickly. We're with Barbara, and one of the things I wanted to see if we had time, you've mentioned about reaching across the years with kids that had cancer and different illnesses, and they are thriving today. Could you, you know, a couple of them in the newsletter. I was reading, is it Ludry and then Caitlin Knight Dugan? Yes. Could you tell a little bit about them?
I would love to. They are the most amazing young women. Caitlin was 3 years old, and on Christmas Eve, she was diagnosed with Wilms tumor, which is a cancer of the kidney, and she had to have surgery. And her mother saw on the nightstand next to her hospital bed a copy of A Jester Has Lost His Jingle that we had donated to the hospital for just that purpose, to give to a family coping with cancer. And she got the book, and she began reading it to Caitlin throughout her hospital stay, which was several weeks. And they fell in love with the story. They read it over and over and over, and of course then took it home. And it became part of their nightly ritual at bedtime. And Caitlin said she actually learned to read through the book, because one of the wonderful things about the rhyme in the book, David didn't talk down to any of his children. He didn't dumb it down. It's real words and really sophisticated, but very simple at the same time. And, and it's universally understood. And she continued to have the book and use it and to help herself, boost herself whenever she needed it. And one day they contacted me when she began college. And she had a picture of herself with the original book. It was all dog-eared. She still has it. And now she's completed college. She's a physician's assistant. And she uses the book herself as a physician's assistant to help young children and older children get through the process of their illness and to feel good inside and to stay positive and to find hope and love and laughter within themselves and share it. And so we stay in touch with her and her mom, and who says the book really has helped her through all these years too. And Caitlin is now married, and she's 28, and it's just incredible. And Ludry is this darling young girl from New Jersey, and she did what Neil did when she was in middle school. She participated in one of our literacy readathons. It was our Reading to Give program. She ended up being the top reader in the fourth grade. And when she was in high school, I believe, she ended up being diagnosed with cancer herself. And she had a rare brain tumor. And she returned back to the Jester, which was also given to her in the hospital. And she has stayed with the Jester, as has her mother, whose name is Kathy Dabney. And they continue to go back and forth with the Jester every time they need to have their spirits raised and find the love and laughter and resilience that they have needed to get through the whole process of cancer. And she is now going to be graduating college this spring, so probably late April or May, and she is looking forward to having the Jester continue to stay with her. And there's a third young woman. Her name is
Bethany.
Yes, and she was 18, was diagnosed with a very rare brain tumor at St. Jude's. And again, she received one of the books we had donated, and she contacted me to tell me how it had helped her. And over the years, we stayed in touch, and she has she's now getting a graduate degree in nursing and for pediatric oncology patients. She's now 31, uses the book all the time, and she shares it with children and their parents and families. And when she was in college, what she did is she took a phrase of David's journal that we talk about in The Jester Has Lost His Jingle, in David's biography, and she put together a beautiful poster with the quotes that David talked about were what kept him going. And
yeah, and please share that, because he also said that if they feel pain at his leaving, there's a phrase there. So would you share that?
I would have to find it in the book.
I have it right here. What he said was, "For I would be like a seed planted in all of them," and let me see. Okay, I'll start again. "For I would be like a seed planted in all of them, and when they would think of me, my memory, my spirit, I would blossom again, live again, be with you again, love you again, and be alive within you." I thought that was so profound.
I couldn't agree more. David was like a little jester himself. He loved to kid around. He loved to make people laugh and smile. In high school, he did a lot of performances in musicals, and he loved kidding around with people. But he was always there to help them if they had a problem. They could always count on him to keep their problems confidential, but for him to help them learn how to be positive within themselves and how to love themselves and spread love themselves and to be really good citizens and help other people. And he was like that from the time he was a little boy. And and he was silly and playful. He was smart. He was a wonderful writer. And his book was only the beginning. And he was also a wonderful artist. And after his passing, his professor of art at Yale told me he was the spark plug of their graduating art class, and that he really had promise of being a very successful, serious artist, not only as an illustrator, but as an artist, serious artist in the future. Unfortunately, he was never able to accomplish that because he died before his 23rd birthday. But he encourages other children to do that. And I hope through our program, in our introduction of this art program, we call it Farley's Fun for All Art, PHUN, Fun for All Art. So that,
and that's something new, Bob?
Yeah, we just started it this last semester with a program that was funded by the Good Neighbors Campaign of the University of Southern California, which has supported our programs for many years now. And this was something special we really wanted to do, and we developed it by collaborating with a teacher to make it something that would have special social-emotional impact on their lives. So, and there are many children who have struggled with reading, and I understand that very much, and yet they can express themselves beautifully through art. And many children like David are blessed and able to express it both ways, but the teachers in responding to it said it was wonderful seeing how all these children were so excited about this project. So we're developing it now, and we will incorporate it within our Reading Makes a Difference program and our Reading to Give program, so that children have really creative outlets, and we hope we can find ways we can work with volunteers who will help us scan in some of these pictures and get them posted online. I really want to share them with everyone, because they're very inspiring, and I love to see children inspired by David's own story and by the story he wrote and illustrated, and then carry that into their own lives, and as you said earlier, pay it forward. And it's so exciting to see that happen. And
Well, we're running out of time, and I want to, first of all, thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us, you know, the details of the journey of David and the book, and here we are on the 30th anniversary. What can people do? They can donate, they can go to thejester.org, correct?
Yes, and they can donate directly. They can contact me through the website or email me, Barbara@thejester.org, B-A-R-B-A-R-A, @thejester.org. Be sure you have the "the" in front of it. I would love to talk to your listeners all over the country and see how their interests will work with us so that we can do things to expand the reach of the Jester in their community to benefit the children in their community and reach out to them and involve them in helping others. I really think when you are sad, the best way to come out of it is to help others. And
absolutely. Yeah, I so agree.
I look forward to hearing from them, and I will get right back to them and find ways that we can work together that reflect their skills and their interests and what they want to do, who they want to bring the story of the Jester and its benefits to in their own community. I think it's very important that people work for their own community, but I would love to have this expand throughout the country.
Yes, I would like to see that too. So everyone listening, share it with other people in your family, your friends, your cousins, your coworkers. This show will be reheard, replayed a number of times. So call and connect with Barbara, go on the site and make a donation. Imagine all of that just continuing to bubble up in love and kindness and unity. So until we come together again, thank you so much, Barbara. Till we come together again, au revoir.
Au revoir. I look forward and thank you so much for your invitation.
Are you seeking a clearer path to love?
Welcome.
Then tune in to the Love by Intuition show next week. All designed to your highest good. To contact Deborah Bouffet, owner of Empowered Connections, call her at 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or link on to lovebyintuition.com. Remember, we are all one, and we are all part of the miracle of love.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.